Ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engines run. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff and Apollo 11. Tower clear.
Fellow listeners, now I present to you E.T. First Contact Radio, starring our wonderful host, Martin Horst.
Yes, brothers and sisters from this planet, this solar system, this universe and beyond, greetings. We are back with a live show with a special guest, Chris Brown. He is a contactee, he is amazing, he is a human being like you and me, and he has a soul, he has an oversoul, he has a higher self. And he had an encounter, and I don't know anything about him except that he's a very nice gentleman with a history, and he's going to share his story with us here live on Fighting Forces Radio and bbsradio.com, the stations that are concerned, that are conscious, and that are bringing the latest galactic news 24 hours a day. The guys are working behind the scenes here on this station. We love you, Donald and Douglas, for all you do. We are getting to a point, a peaking point, the compression breakthrough in history where we'll experience the event, disclosure, the rest of the cabal and the financial abundance we all deserve. Without further ado, Chris, I want to welcome you and I want to hear your story live here on these amazing radio stations.
All right, well, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. And so we are living in very exciting times, Chris. A lot of information coming through from different contactees, and you are one of those guys that's going to share an amazing story. So when did you have your encounter, and what happened after it, and how did the ball start rolling, and what was the impact on your life, my friend?
Yeah, mine started off on August 18th of 2011. It was 9 p.m. in the evening, and I went out to go water my yard. I was, it was summertime, and I had went out and went to the back first, watered my back, little garden I had, and then I pulled my hose out to the front. I did that in about 10 minutes, in the back, and then it was probably, 10 minutes, I say. And then when I pulled my hose around the side gate and all that and pulled it out in front to do my front yard, I had put a bunch of weed killer on my yard that day, and so I was having to really soak it. And when I pulled it out in the yard, and I had to get it out in the road to pull out the kinks. And then when I got out in the middle of the road, I smaller town, and there's just fields all around this neighborhood I'm in. And when I looked down the road, in the field straight down, I seen some odd color lights. They just looked, they weren't so odd that I took them in, like, and stopped looking at them because the sun wasn't all the way down yet. And I thought maybe it was just kind of part of the neighborhood there. And I just wasn't anything that stuck out at me. So I went and pulled the hose back and proceeded to water my yard. And like I said, I put a bunch of weed killer and crap on it that day. And so I really had to soak it down. And it was out there for 20 minutes, 25 minutes on the one app before I went and I pulled back the hose again to get the kinks out once again to do the second half of the yard. And by that time, it had gotten a little bit darker by then. Then that is when I was out in the middle of the road, I caught this. When I looked out in the field again, and it was just, that's all I seen was this huge glass dome behind the trees. If you look on the Open Minds report and, you know, the MUFON report kind of shows a little bit what I'm talking, but I couldn't see really the craft. I kind of could see the lights kind of underneath the glass dome, but all I could just see was this humongous, I mean, it would look like a diamond dome to me. And it was, I would say 300 feet in diameter. And it was just, I mean, it was so big. And I just was like, whoa. And so I still had the hose. I'm staying in the middle of the street. And I threw the hose into my yard. I can't remember if it got in my yard or landed in the, and it's still partly in the yard or the street or what. All I know, anyway. And so I'm just sitting there, oh, my gosh, trying to take this thing in. So I went and I ran to my neighbors on the one side of me, that would have been on my left hand side, and then I ran over there to go knock on the door and be like, but I stopped. I don't know. I got probably 5 feet to their door because their light turned on, their motion sensor light in their driveway, and I mean they're. They would have just been one of the kids. They had all their kids there, the three boys that were there at the time and their girlfriends and all that family. They were doing stuff. So it was like they could have just went open the door and I would have been standing there like, but I just stopped, you know, and I was like, what am I going to say? They're going to look at me like I'm a deer in the headlights, you know, like, so, you know, and plus as crazy as is the sound, it's still going in my mind. Is this even happening? So I run out back out to the middle of the street. And run out to the middle of the street, still there. And so I go and I'm sitting there and then I really was just sitting there at this point trying to why I didn't go and bang on the door and say, come out here and help, you know, clarify the fact of, yeah, hey, you're seeing the same thing here. We're seeing it too. What if I would have gone out there and the thing was gone? I would look like a real fool, huh? But anyway, so I went back out there and like I say, I was just trying to look at it just to figure out, you know, and observe it, like, is this even happening? And then it's just this feeling just for a second of kind of a weightlessness, like everything was really blurry, kind of purplish kind of color, a little bit purplish blue. And I felt like if I grabbed, put my hand on something or really was vibrating really hard and it would... everything, my vision, everything is really shaky. And I kind of had like this feeling in my lower, like loins area, like real warm feeling just for a second. And I mean, it was really scary. I had never felt like that before. And I just said, oh God, in my head, because it was really scaring me. And I was like, I felt it like coming on, like more gradually getting heavier and heavier. But then it just stopped. As soon as I just said that, it went, got you. I don't know. It was saying, oh God, or help me, mommy, or something, right? I mean, I was kind of scared at that point in time, but nevertheless, anyway, so it stopped. Gosh, I didn't sit there and really concentrate on how I just felt. And I'm like, here's this thing still sitting there in front of me. So I remember I got my iPod, my iPad, iPod. Anyway, and so I went and I hadn't had it, but just that Christmas I got it that following Christmas and so it was, my kids were always on it at that point in time, and I never really was on it much and kind of had just started working with it and learning kind of how to Wi-Fi my one buddy and really was unsure of all the settings of what to even do on it. And so, you know, I remember I had that, so I pulled that out and I ran down to probably about 50 feet down because there's a stoplight there and there's street lights. I thought, well, if I could look lights, maybe I can get a better, you know, recording of what I'm going to try to get here. So I, you know, run down, like I say, I was by about 50 feet. And let's say it was, at that point in time, it was 9:30, I would say, p.m. And so I went down there. I'm shaking so hard, guys. Oh, man. I'm trying to take a deep breath. I'm trying to relax. I'm trying to figure out the setting to get the thing on to you know. Meanwhile, this huge thing's right in front of me. The crazy thing of it is the town was so dead. That's the oddest thing. It's about how dead the town is. I mean, granted, I had this big, huge thing going on. I wouldn't notice pretty much what was going on around me anyway. Just caught in that moment. But I was still wanting to make sure. I mean, look, you know, other people around got to collaborate this, you know. I mean, I was still too stooped to just go and bang on the darn neighbor's door. I'm still trying to figure that out. But anyway, so I'm shaking so hard trying to record this thing. I finally put it on the ground, the iPod. I've got my one hand holding my other hand. Is my hand shaking so hard? I'm trying to figure out the setting on it. Finally, I just gave up because here it is still there. And then it was, I noticed after I stopped, then I noticed it move back and forth three times, like 30 feet on the first two times. And on the third time, it moved east toward the mountains, which would have been from, Mount Bachelor, because Mount Bachelor, so I'm in Oregon here, so Mount Bachelor area. And so I go and I find myself running back because I'm in the neighborhood there and I got trees and stuff. You know, as it starts to move, but it wasn't actually to go in. It wasn't until when it moved is when I could see the whole size of the craft. I mean, that behind the trees there on that huge field, it's all private. It's a farmer's field. But behind there, the trees is a big valley. It must be really big because the field's extremely big. The field goes on for miles. And so I don't know how big that valley is, but I'm assuming that the valley goes down there pretty, you know, far enough, you know. And but it wasn't until it moved and then I could see the size of it. And I could, with all the, I mean, I can only put its size onto an aircraft carrier. But to me, it's swamp an aircraft carrier. I mean, it looked like a mile size of them. I mean, it was the biggest thing I ever seen in my life. And I mean, that was just a shock just seeing this, you know. And I'm saying, whoa. So it went away. And then I'm like thinking, well, I'm gonna run back to my driveway and think I get a better view. And I was actually gonna try to go even run in my backyard and go in my back field there because it's more open to see if I could see it. You know, but I just didn't have enough time to do that. But anyway, and as I was running back and I was like looking up in space, it was actually pretty much like where the disc was in the field, but directly above that, but in space, I noticed it could have been the same thing. I don't know, but it looked like a star. It just looked like a moving star. I mean, it was going fast. It was like if I threw a baseball as hard as I could, and you know, it's about how fast it was traveling, but in space. And I was just, whoa! So here I go, you know, like say, so I'm running back, you know, because that's kind of in the process of in between the running back and to my driveway and seeing that. So anyway, so I get back and then I'm lose sight of that. So then I'm looking around again. I'm still trying to monkey with this doggone iPod. And so then I went and then I just happened to glance over my right hand shoulder and then a craft came over the neighborhood. Oh, I don't know. I judge by the lights underneath of it. I'd say maybe 15 by 15 feet. And it went, as it went over, my dog was inside our house, and he barked. And then all the dogs in the neighborhood all barked, and it went over on the other side of the neighborhood, actually right at my buddy's house there, and he had his two dogs were outside, and they were just going to town, barking, and then it stayed there for a little bit, and then it was gone. And, of course, I was the only one home at the time, and well, that was, my wife came home shortly after, like 10 minutes afterwards, and I'm telling her, and, of course, calling my mom, and it was a huge day. It was this thing, and so it was, here it was. You know, the next day, I walked the block. I'd known my buddy for a long time, the one over there on the where it went over and his dogs were barking. And I'd known him for about 30 years. So I had him on Facebook and all that. And I messaged him and I went over there and talked to him. They were gone. He had a band. They had band practice that night. And so they weren't there. And I guess they took me out. And then there's another couple that I did know, and I mentioned it to them because I felt comfortable. And then there was another lady out there. I can't even remember what I said to her. I really didn't come off too much of anything about what happened to me. I just asked her if she'd seen anything, and she hadn't seen anything. So I just kind of didn't really go anywhere with that. And then the neighbor on the other side of me, on my right hand side, her and I are friends. She's the same age I was, and she was over at my house, came by, or I don't know how it was. Anyway, nevertheless, we do talk, and I was telling her, I said, "Oh my gosh, you aren't going to believe what happened." And I was telling her all what happened, and so she went home, she went and told her daughter, who was 17 at the time, and her daughter's like, "Oh my god!" And so she ran over and she says, "My friend seen the same crap that night too," and she didn't know any details too much about it. Of course, it made me feel good because I was like thinking at this point in time, I was alone. I couldn't find, you know. I knew somebody had to have seen it. Geez, it was so big. And so anyway, I went in. She didn't know any details too much at that time. She was going to try to get back to me. And so, you know, it was during that time. I think I tried to call the paper. I got a hold of the paper, tried to, you know, tell them about it. I don't know how that really didn't go. And so then here I am out there for 11 days after. And I'm out there every single night. I'm going to bed. I'm praying. I'm wanting this thing to come back. I'm wanting to get the best picture. I'm wanting to do this and that. I'm wanting to make the historical counter, right? Basically, it's me and E.T. going to shake hands on film. That's what I'm hoping for. So anyway, it was the 26th, which was a Friday night. We were up late. My wife had a friend over watching. We were watching movies. They were kind of watching the movies or like chick flicks, but anyway, and I was in the other room, I don't know, so when any of the movies got over and I went out there, I'd been, like, say, for the previous nights, every night after the first encounter, I had been out there with my camera that my dad had gotten me for a real nice camera, and I had just had the video running with it on my wrist, just ready for it to happen. So here it is, the movies go, and I drug my boy, he kind of been out there sky watching with me anyway. Kind of during those days, and so it was like, say, it was almost midnight when the movie got over, so it would have been technically the 27th, and which was Saturday. Anyway, and we went out there, and he didn't want to be out there that long. He was kind of wanting to go inside, and so I, you know, went out there, and he was standing at the curb, you know, I was watering, and he was wanting to go in, so I hurried up, you know, was kind of as quick as I could. I'd say 5-10 minutes, I guess. And probably more like 5. Anyway, and so I went and dropped the hose walked up to the curb when I was done and dropped the hose. I said, don't look like we're going to see anything tonight. I said, I was just saying we'll just come down and show his detail. And he said, oh, yeah, you know, of course. And so I turned off the camera and I put it on, I took off my wrist and put it in my pocket, and both of us turned. Just as we both turned around, or backs turned, a pop with the flash. We just turned around instantly. I just thought, like, simultaneously, like a transformer went out, or something like that. And then, it really didn't come into shape, really, what it was. But then it did. It's all I can say is, you know, you see my picture there that I made on the Skype, my profile picture that I made, and that's the one that's on the Open Minds. It was like a bubble, like a soap bubble. That was about 5 feet and 5 feet, I guess, in five in diameter, and that was fire white on the outside, and it was spinning backwards while it was going forward. It was it's just like, I don't know, 6 feet from us. And it was going over the part of the road where they tore up and they put fiber optic cable in the year before. And inside of it was, it mixed in with a purplish, greenish, I guess it was, I was going to say teal inside of it, teal green with all this golden dust that was, you know, there was so much golden dust. It was like looking at a static TV or looking at the Milky Way floating around this sphere. I would say a beach ball size glass diamond looking ball sphere. And it had a red glow in the middle of it. We could see, and it wasn't until it went spinning away from us. Say it was moving at a pace of a fast walk, not fast. It went away. It spun probably about 12 feet away from us. We could see it in the middle of the sphere. It was in a teardrop shape. It was glowing cherry red, just glowing cherry red. And as it was going over the part of the road where they tore up the cable, you could see it. It was sucking the power from just part from that on the bottom part of the bubble, just on through the cable or through the wires coming up. But the upper part of it was all clear. We could see all the way through it. And it's perfect as I'm looking at the computer right now. But there's a lot of electrical currents or something that seemed to be getting pulled up from the bottom of the from the wires or whatever from the bottom of the bubble, and it was making as it was spinning backwards while it was going forward. And like say, and then it went, yeah, I'd say about 12 feet away from us. And then it like sat there, and then it spun, and then it went over the iron plate manhole cover, kind of diagonally over, I guess probably another 10 feet, and then it shot off. It made the same popping noise that it did when it showed up, and then some sparks rolled around on the iron plate manhole cover, and then there's a power line that was right above the iron plate manhole cover that went across the street into the little cul-de-sac there, and then but some sparks flew off of the transformer on the power pole, and they say it was just gone, boom. And well, my wife's friend came out right at that point in time. We thought my wife was coming out too, like they seen it, and she was just getting ready to go home. She didn't see anything. Oh man, I don't even remember what I said to her. I just was just, it was just seconds after. I mean, it just was, I just don't remember what I said to her. Nevertheless, she got in a car and took off. And as she did, the neighbor girl was coming home that night. The one that had her friends that seen the disc too. And so I hear all of a sudden this just happened. So it was like the perfect timing, and here I'm laying this on her, and she's like, oh, well, I did talk to him. She said that they watched it for like 45 minutes. They were up camping, and they tried to record it, but they couldn't get any service on their phone, of course. Right. And so they got really scared. They just went home. And, so, you know, I mean, it made me feel good. And as we're sitting there talking, and then all of a sudden this chunk of a disc went shooting right by her. See, I was kind of starting to tell her what all happened to me a little bit too, you know, I was more what happened. And anyway, and then as I was talking, this chunk of the streak of a disc went shooting right by all three of us. And we just, her and I were, whoa. And then my son too. But it was actually during the time that, her and I were talking that my boy was just sitting there next to me, and that disc that went shooting by us, there was two of them. One of them was above the neighbor's house on the other side of me, the ones that I was going to go knock on the door, but I didn't. It was 45 or about 40, 45 feet up above their house, my boy said, the one. And then there was another one above it that was going a little bit faster. He said it was leaving like a little streak kind of behind it. And he just couldn't say anything. He was just paralyzed and trying to say something. And he couldn't say anything until it had shot off. And so then, of course, we all went, whoa, as it zigzagged around the block. And anyway, so he has got his pictures there on the MUFON and Open Minds and stuff that he had drawn of what he had seen. And anyway, so that had happened. And of course she'd went in, and I was tried to go get my wife to have her come out, and she was kind of scared. And then Brianna went in there and got her mom and came out. And then she stayed out for a little bit, but we just were kind of uneasy. And I guess, well, it wasn't like right there again. So we all went inside, that was on the my encounters. And then it was me trying to, you know, because I was just really stressed out after that. I was like, wow, this is blown away. Holy cow, what just happened to me, you know? For one thing, I really was just taken out of a guy that had never any UFO encounter or anything. So it was just a real eye-opener. But I didn't know where to go. All I knew before is, like I was trying to do, was call the news and the paper or whatever I was trying to. I didn't know about MUFON or anything. And then so it was the following week. I say that happened on the weekend. That was Saturday. And then so I think it was, I believe it was probably Tuesday when I heard about MUFON, or maybe Monday night. It was maybe too late to call them or something. But I heard about MUFON, and then I contacted them. It would have been just like 2 days later, and then they were really blown away. Excuse me. They kind of, they didn't really take me in, I don't think, as much until I started getting into the second encounter. And I never was the red liquid inside the sphere. I think that's maybe what woke them up. So. Anyway, they came over. He drove from Portland area, and then the field investigator, one of the MUFON field investigators, actually just lived right up the road from me. So, and he came. And he was excited because he had never met the state investigator. He'd been contacted with him through email and all that, but had never met him personally. And he was excited, and so he. They both met at my house at 9:30. I guess that would have been that Wednesday, maybe. Yeah, it might have been Wednesday before they came over. And they did all the test and all that, and on the road, and did our report and what they could. And I was hoping they were going to go out there, you know, maybe we could go over to the farmer's, knock on his door, and see if we could get out there in that back field of his. I mean, geez, who knows what we could have found, you know? It could have been... But it was private and land, and they could only do so much. But anyway, so they did that, and then they did a follow-up report on us. And and then it was actually I think it's really when I contacted MUFON is after that is when my phones got tapped. I really didn't have any issues with telling people about my encounters up until I contacted MUFON. I'll admit, I mean, I'm gracious for MUFON, but I'm curious now because I have heard through the grapevine that MUFON's number, that they get lines have gotten tapped and stuff like that. And I didn't start getting my phone started messing up right after I called them. And so I'd go good every time I talk about the first encounter. No problem. Soon, guys, as I got to the second encounter, and I started talking detail, and I started talking about the red liquid, and I started talking about how it was spinning, and I started talking about the sphere, and I started talking about, just start getting into it. My phone hang up on me. Every time. Holy cow, it was so frustrating. Or it'd go out on me. So then, excuse me, that lasted for, I'd say a good, three weeks. And then during that time, I was out still kind of taking care of my yard and stuff, you know, it's good summer. Summer's still kind of going on, late September. mid-September. And so I was out there having to take care of my yard and all that. And it's always when my yard looks the nicest, you know. But I noticed a black Suburban coming down the neighborhood road. Now, it's not an odd thing for me to see Suburbans in this neighborhood. It's a nice neighborhood, and it's either you're seeing the Suburbans going around. Everyone has a white Suburban or a white Tahoe or whatever going around. Plus, the neighbor on the other side of the people that had that was going to knock on the house, the one on the other side. Don't get too many details, but he's a mechanic at the Chevy dealership, which is behind the field. And well, this field's all around the neighborhood I was in, but in my backyard, there's the field that's in my backyard, and connected to that field to the Chevy dealership. And he's the master mechanic there. So he always comes home at lunchtime. It's real convenient because he's just right there. And when he does that, he'll, from time to time, bring home some of the cars that he's working on to give them their test run to see if they worked okay and all that. And so here I go. I see this brand new Suburban come, black, all black, no all super tinted out windows, and no plates. You know, I just really didn't take too much of it. And it was just going normal speed. And then when it got to right there, right where I was at in my house, it went super slow, creeping speed, just like super, super slow. Just, you know, as fast as that orb was moving at a fast walk, you know, just to go past my house, you know, the whatever it is. My house isn't that big, wasn't that big. And then to speed up, to go up around the corner, just to do a quick U-turn, to come all the way back down, to go to do it again, like they were purposely. And the windows were so tinted out that I couldn't even see in. And so I was like, well, I guess it's not the neighbor, you know, it was first. And I caught on to it when they turned around and come around, because I'd already having issues with my phone and things were kind of seeming weird. So I just looked at him really crappy and gave him this real mean look and sternness. So if they were just regular people that were lost in the shuffle or whatever, they're probably thinking, who's this a-hole, right? But nevertheless, that's what I did. And so that's my encounter. You know, I like I say, I was a guy who never had any UFO encounters of anything, and they really shook me up, you know, and they shook my son up a little bit. And so MUFON, it, you know, they're blown away. It took them a good month and a half to make the report and to whatever. And so they built us our main report and on the MUFON there. And then there was a convention going on a couple weeks after our encounter. And the state investigator went to go to bat for me. And he wasn't really received real well because it was new. And, you know, and so it really took him down a little bit. He really got depressed. And but nevertheless, he, you know, he said, let's do it, you know. And so it's, I got my report out there, and that floated around for a while. And then it was Open Minds found out, and then they came out and did an interview and a story on me. And then after that, and then ended up just kind of following this other things with the UFO Casebook and Black Bolt, and then I've been Roger Marsh, the MUFON Monthly Journal here, came to find out that when they did my MUFON case, that they forgot to give me a case number in the midst of everything, and to enter my encounter in the MUFON Monthly Journal, which I think it's all timing, because it's featured in the MUFON Journal, and I think if they would have entered it, it may not have made it, and it may not have been featured the way that it really, in my opinion, should have. And so I guess everything's happened in timing, because it really I wanted to make up the picture there that you see, and that took me a while. That took me a little bit to make up the picture. And then as soon as I got that picture made up, it was just the next week that Open Minds reached out to me. And then that was for real good, because then I was able to get my picture that I had on Open Minds. And then from there, and then UFO Casebook and all my others stepped in there and really got my that was my biggest thing, is to get the vision of what I had seen out. I know a lot of people have encounters with orbs and crafts and stuff, but a lot of people are walking away from these with lost memories, lost time, can't remember. And that wasn't the way it was with my son and I. Like I say, we could see perfectly. This is all I'm describing it here is, well, is the way I'm looking at the computer, and everything around me is as well as we could see inside of it. And now, I'd never heard of Bob Lazar before. I had heard of Bob Lazar. I didn't know the name, but I remember the case. I remember it being a real popular deal, kind of. But I didn't know anything about what the technology that he had talked about behind it, and the Element 115, like spinning red mercuries, you know, other thing people have called it. But the people at MUFON did. The supervisor, I think he got that in the sense of knowing that I wasn't getting it. And I just like telling him what I saw. And that was, I guess, where his thing of it was, is you should get on the computer and educate yourself, Chris. Because, you know, that was the biggest thing, is me educating myself after my encounter, too. Because I wasn't into the UFO scene, but maybe flip on some shows and see the same story over and over again and flip it after that, because it's nothing new. And which, I guess, another reason prompted me to get out there to tell my encounter for something new and something different, and to connect some dots that have all been talked about. And so, you know, I'm trying to do that with my encounter. It's been a big, huge thing for me. It's been something that I've sat around and worked very hard and getting my encounter. And I think for Bill Burns and Nancy, his wife, and Angel Espinino, for people like them that have helped me out there. And I have other friends too, you know, to help me get out there and to share my vision of, you know, and to help get our vision out of what we've seen. And there's a lot of people out there debunking Bob Lazar. And all I have to say is that Bob Lazar had to have known something. Because all what I've seen is what he's describing however many years ago. And, you know, Stanton Friedman goes on and debunking Bob Lazar. And, you know, I don't know. You know, so all I know is that I know what I've seen. And my son's seen. And the neighbor. There's also was another person that was involved that had seen the orb too. From a distance, I called up my landlord to hear he was going on telling his buddy about what had happened to his rental, his person in his rental house, right? And so here I just happened to call him because I was having rent checkup. I don't know what I was doing, but I called, and he's like, "Hey, my buddy's here, Chris. He's seen the same thing that night," and he puts me on the phone to the guy. And the guy started telling me, yeah, it was that night. It had been a little bit weeks after, so he couldn't remember what approximate day it was. But he had had a night job where he had drove around, and he, you know, so I was like, you know, and he describing it going to Sublimity where I was at and where I lived and all that. And he was like, hey, I'd be ready to go on your report and all that. And then because if they need any help, because that's when I was working with MUFON, and they were going to come over and getting ready to do the report and stuff. You know, they came over the first time and did all the tests and all that, and then they were going to come back and do the report. And so I was telling him, well, he's like, if you need me on the report, and I was like, yeah, you know, and I would have got him on the report, but as I had told you previously, is that his baby passed away. It was just 2 days after I talked to him on the phone and all that, and so I just never talked to him after that, or, you know, I never bothered with him again. And I said something to my landlord, and, you know, he said he hadn't talked to him for a while. So, yeah, so that's my encounter. You know, I'm hoping now that, you know, I've got the work with the MUFON Monthly Journal, and working with Roger Marsh to maybe have my encounter on the third season, if there's going to be a third season, we still don't know, of the television show Hangar One. And it's really just to get my vision out, guys. You know, that's my biggest thing, is to, for me to be able to go and to get my vision of what we've seen out of the orb, you know, and what it looked like. And that's the biggest thing. You know, it was, you know, a lot of people see the orb and it's the orange orb. Well, the thing of it was, is it would have been orange, and all that bubble around the sphere would have been illuminating, the orangeness, you know, with all that golden dust inside of it. But that golden stuff wasn't illuminating. It was just freely, just you know, it wasn't charged up by any, you know, at all. And so I could definitely see, you know, when I see in other videos and stuff when I'm in the air and they're really orange or what, you know, with the golden colors, with the red amber kind of always in a little bit, you know. There's a lot of things, you know. It's I guess if you want to have somebody look at a video of an orb, you know, that somebody recorded, I guess I'm a pretty good visionary there. I'll give you, you know, how it looks and if it looks legit or not, you know. I guess maybe that's egotistical on my part. I don't know. All I know is I see this thing up close and, excuse me, it's a pretty, I see a lot of videos, you know, and I see a lot of people go, oh, orbs here and orbs there. And then I'm going, oh, I don't know if that looks like anything I've seen, But anyway, guys, here I'm doing all the talking, you know, I'm just kind of.
Well, Chris, this is a fresh of the press story. This is hot news. This is amazing. What you have seen. Now, I want to ask you about the impact on your personal life. Mm. Has this encounter triggered inside of you a spiritual awakening? Or have you started to look differently at life or at deeper truths about life, life and death, reincarnation? Has this triggered a change in you, and have you, how do you see life? What happened to you after, psychologically? See?
You know, oh boy, the emotions hit, because, you know, at first I had the emotions of, the first emotion was like, okay, the amazement happened, and then was, okay, all you guys, all everybody in this UFO industry, I'm going to Travis Walton, I'm thinking all that Nick Pope, and I'm thinking all Bill Burns. At that point in time, Bill Burns was the main guy because there was UFO hunters was going. And so that's the only thing I could think of was those guys. And I'm thinking those guys, these guys. And, you know, all thinking then the process of scientist, because I was just in such the dark of the whole thing that I didn't, you know, I'm thinking, oh, I got to get all the scientists. I got to show these people what I just saw. I got to tell them what I just saw. That thing shot off at light speed. It was gone. Light speed happened right in front of me. And literally, and that was my biggest thing, because I was so a mental midget in the UFO industry, in a sense where I wasn't, you know, educated. And those were the first ones. Then now the other emotions came, being scared. Scared now to kind of go outside alone. Then other feelings on the sense of not having anybody to talk to. My wife hasn't been as well. She is, but she wasn't really understanding in the sense, and, you know, was supportive. And, well, I had mom there, so she was, and I'll be honest with you, I was in tears and crying and, you know, wondering what's going on, why did it happen. And then I felt bad because I had my boy out there and I drug him outside, and now I don't want him being scared and him having, you know, these feelings for the rest of his life at 9.5 years old. There were so many feelings that like hit me like in the following days, and then it just lasted for months. It lasted for a good year. Just the feelings of emotions and up and down and down, and I was something that new is starting to happen to me and different. And I got over that and did that. Of course, I got on the radio and doing my thing. And to know that I hooked up with Bill Burns and all these people, to know that my friend is huge. I mean, I made it so far, you know, but now all of a sudden I'm getting nightmares. I don't know what they are. All I know is the same freaking dream every time. Well, started with in the old house because I had to move from the house that I was living in where I had my encounter 130 miles away because my landlord had to sell the house because he came down with cancer and had to get rid of his rentals. So forced me to move. But I did have a dream there. It was just one dream where I was out in the backyard and I was looking up in the sky and I said, there it is. And I could see it coming down on me like the UFO, right? That was then. That was the one. Now it kind of happened. Then I moved. Now I'm in this house. Well, now I've been having dreams again. Now all of a sudden I'm back. I don't know who I was standing next to, but it was almost like I was at the neighbor's house where I was going to knock on their door. And but I didn't. But it's like I'm staying there, and then it happens, and then all of a sudden I get those feelings again, the feeling of lightlessness, and then I wake up because I get so scared in my dream. I wake up. So then, that was a couple months ago on that one, and then I had another one the other night, which was. I was outside. It felt like I was just on the side outside, here next to the house, out in the little grass area, my new house I'm at. And I was looking outside, and I could see it. It's all like the same thing, but you know, and I'm looking at it, and I'm seeing it come down, and I start feeling those feelings again, the weightlessness, the all I did. And then my wife woke me up because she said I was moaning in my sleep. So, you know, and I told my buddy that, and I haven't ever talked much to my son, to ask him how he's feeling and if how he's had his. And so the other day I asked him, he told me he had the same dream. So, and he described the same, I think it was the same night that I had had my dream, and it was him, and he said his dream was with him and I, and it kind of almost described the same thing, that he was outside. And he was sitting there, and then it just kind of stopped. So I don't know what to think on that whole deal. All I know is I have no missing time on my ends on my encounter. Now, those 11 days I was out there, or, you know, 10 days or whatever previously, I was out there watering my yard, wishing for the thing to come back. Well, maybe it took me one of those nights, and I don't remember. I don't know. But... So that's what's going on recently. With my son and I just found out that out the other day, day before yesterday, about him having the same dream that night. And I just really don't know what to think about that. Maybe it's just coincidental. But I haven't had my – I was always a real vivid dreamer. You know, for years, as a little kid, I always had kind of – they're always the same dreams in the sense where it was always like locker combination or like, you know – can't remember which locker I go to, or I'm late for football signing up, and I can't play football that year because I didn't sign up in time. That's the one that gets me every year, you know, every time. And but then those just went away after my encounter. All my dreams went away after my encounter. I just never remember my dreams as much, and so every now and then maybe, but. Now I'm starting to remember only kind of the UFO dreams a little bit, which has kind of gotten me scary, scared a little bit. I'm hoping that, I don't know what to think on that. They're just dreams. So, you know, and it's been a traumatic thing that a sense that I've lived my emotions out on the radio. I have, it was, well, 6 months probably. About 6 months that I went out, and then I went on the radio and started talking about my encounter and stuff, and you know, so really those are the thick of my emotions right there. And well, I'm still dealing with emotions that I deal with every day, and you know, and
well, Chris, this is normal after such an encounter happening with other contactees as well. I do want to ask you, did you hear about the Galactic Federation of Light? Have you looked into it, into the Sirians, the Pleiadians, people that channel, that have telepathic contact with beings from other planets? And have you read those messages? Have these messages come to your mind? Have you? What are your ideas about it? Because I feel that many people are helped by those beautiful messages shared by the Galactic Federation.
Well, I don't know too much about it. All I know is that I believe that, you know, that there is something to it, you know, as I told you about my epilepsy before. And so maybe there is something that I, you know, I'm able to have a communication with and communicate with these things in a weird way. If I'm, you know, on having a seizure or something, a small one, and but I, yeah, I mean it's, I don't know. I mean it's I never seen an ET in my encounter. You know, I seen the craft, and so to say that I could, you know, have it, you know. Try to, you know, communicate with it. It's a tricky deal, but I guess in a way I did communicate with it. I felt because it came back. So
yeah, because you know there are other people out there on the internet. For example, Sheldon Neidl. If you look at PAOWeb.com, Planetary Activation Organization, his messages are wonderful. He's uplifting hundreds of thousands of people around the world every week with his messages coming out from Tuesday to Wednesday. PAOWeb.com. It's really amazing how he's uplifting people. Because I believe that first contact is imminent, that the event is imminent, where disclosure will happen. For example, Cobra is a guy that knows a lot about the event. He has contact with the Pleiadians. There's another guy, Alkesh, he has contact with the Syrians. Dakota from Tolek. Tolek from Dakota, he is amazing. And those people are kind of educating humanity to prepare us for full contact. So... what is your idea about first contact? You know, that's my radio show is called First Contact Radio, ET First Contact Radio, to prepare people for this beautiful moment where the ruling elite will be arrested, where there will be financial abundance, the galactic technology will be shared with humanity. What's your vision in this field?
Well, I'm all for it. You know, my thing of it is you know, there's a lot of people that, you know, and that's what I want. I'm with you. I with those feelings. But then you got other people and they're like, well, my wife, she believes that this is a whole other deal and that she's on the negative end where she believes that they're demons and that there are things that maybe people shouldn't be digging around for. And my thing of it to her is, well, I think they're God and they're just one and the same. So they're just, you know. If you want to go ahead and call them demons and they'll say, okay, you can go ahead and call me a demon. We'll just make you have greater faith. So, and trying to be a better person. And that's what the UFO to me kind of is, and God and kind of one and all. And, but I would totally be into that. And that's what I want. I'm into that, you know, one day these things coming down and doing all what you did and get showing us this technological, you know, ways that we can get past you know, what we're crap we're living in now and being broke and all what you said above. I totally agree, and I totally am 100% into it. You know, yes. My thing of it is that, you know, it has been a little bit, you know, it's one of those little things where you know, I do wonder, you know, is my wife right? Is it a demons? Is it this, you know, and that? And so there's another little emotion there that has affected me a little bit. And I guess it probably hasn't helped that I've had my wife sit there and play on me. Because, see, I never heard that whole scenario before of the UFO being the demon or potentially demons. I never heard that before. That was when she laid that on me, that was a whole new deal.
I believe that the demons are in our government, ruling the world, behind the scenes, like the Bilderberg meetings. Sure. But the demons are not the guys who are visiting us. They want to help us out. And it's heaven's wish to liberate humanity. Chris, I want to give us a little musical break.
Sure.
There's a guy called Indra, and he has music. It's called a song called Tiamat. And Tiamat is actually a star that's radiating pulses and codes into the universe, and it's received by SETI. It's a kind of sphere or orb with intelligent life. And last year, SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, admitted that this star is actually sending codes that are not random but are intelligent, called Tiamat. And the song is really beautiful. Okay. I hope you will enjoy.
Okay.
And we'll be back after the song, so stay tuned and enjoy the music. music is an adventure. I could play hours and hours of it to make a cosmic journey. And making cosmic journeys, Chris, is what we are doing. That's what we are about to do after First Contact. Now, I just want to point out to you that I think that after your encounter, it's important to become familiar with galactic messages, galacticchannelings.com, PLWeb, Mike Quincy, to name a few. David Wilcock is a guy that could really help you out with his information. And there are others. Maybe you heard about Billy Meyer and his story from the Pleiadians. He had contact in Switzerland in the 1970s. He's going to give a talk in the USA. I will share that information with you. There are many UFO conferences going on. Many people that are great teachers. You might want to have a look on my YouTube channel and check the information shared by a guy called Tolek from Dakota. But also, I would like to bring you in contact with a guy called Jose Bazan. He's in New York. And there are many other people I would like to bring in contact with that. Because in this scenario where you have such an impressive encounter, because I can say, boy, what happened to you is really impressive. It's important that you educate yourself spiritually, because those beings from space are spiritual beings and they want to help humanity. So as quickly as you can, I would say, educate yourself with galactic knowledge. A book like Voyager from a lady from England, that is also going to help you, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. But Chris, you are chosen to share this story by the Galactics. They are our friends. They are no demons. They are our friends. They want to help humanity. And you had your wake-up call. And now I think it's important to develop your spiritual powers and your psychic powers in order to stay in balance and to learn more about what's out there, what dimensions are out there, what worlds and realms are out there, because we are not alone. And there's no death, there's only a continuation of our soul after our physical body dies off. But we're going to experience ascension. And ascension is the process that's ongoing, and we will all reach a higher state of consciousness. And this is going to be beautiful, Chris. And it's going to be amazing. I feel that your story is going to echo through the next decades, because First Contact will be happening very soon, and before that disclosure will happen. Somebody will announce that we are not alone. Either it be the Galactics, the ETs themselves, or one of our governments, probably Putin, because in the United States things are very tightly controlled still. Brother, I want to say to you that you are loved by those beings that showed that craft to you. And what is your what's your next step? What are you gonna do? What's your are you going to do more radio shows? What do you want to do with your story?
That's my biggest thing, is doing my radio shows and you know, hopefully, you know, I things will just kind of maybe take off from there. I, like I say, I've been interviewed for, you know, a couple different television shows, and I'm not here to make a buck, and I'm not, don't want a buck. All I am to show my vision and to get my vision of what we've seen out to everybody. And to be in somebody who I've never met, who doesn't even know me, and that's Bob Lazar, and the ultimate be in his corner, because you know, I'd be so upset to know that people go around and debunk him when he's seen something special too, and he's fuming about it, and probably gets really upset knowing all this. But I do believe that you know, I do need to be out there and be a teacher and educate people. And I have tried, you know, I tried to get on the end of going to doing a couple, UFO festival here in McMinnville, you know, and get out there and talking to the public and stuff. But it's hard to get involved in these type of things, because there's such a list of people that are always doing them, and there kind of seem to be a circuit there. And And it's hard because I don't read. And it's crazy as it sounds, guys, I never read a whole book ever since high school. And I don't even think I even read that whole book. I just know that I don't read. And so it's really hard for me education is my computer and television, unfortunately. When it comes to reading, I've never read a book. I mean, I can read just fine and, you know, and all that. It's just that it's hard when people say, you know, Chris, you got to go get a hold of a book and read get a hold of this person and that. And then, you know, it's...
Well, you know what you can do? On YouTube, there are things that they read for you. There are creating robots. And, for example, Archangel Michael or the Galactic Federation of Light, they have beautiful messages that can really help you out there.
Sure.
To understand your experience and to put it in a light. And... I'm really excited with your story. It's just that I would like that it would happen to me. But I feel close to an encounter. I feel I'm being prepared for something big. But not only me, all of humanity. Something big is hanging in the air. Something is going to bring a big change. And this is the galactics that want that we stop and cease all war and fights, and that we work together as one, as humanity, and I believe this is our future, because we cannot continue like this much longer to pollute our planet. So, what's your vision about the future, Chris? And how do you see humanity evolving after more encounters will happen like you had?
Well, you know, my thing of it I've always said is I don't know. People act well. Future, is, you know, the government ever going to come talk about this? And my thing of it was, is this stuff is what we seen in the middle of this sphere was so deadly looking. I probably have never seen, I've never seen anything that deadly looking except on TV. And so, you know, that's a huge thing when people say, well, when's the government going to talk about this technology, or when are this, or why aren't we using this? Is the fact of, you know, we're dealing with Fukushima. We dealt with Chernobyl, and it's the fact that, you know, these things go flying around. They crash. To me, I was looking at Fukushima sitting right there in the middle of that clear ball. And so, you know, it was, to me, that's a huge thing when people say, when is the government going to talk about this? I always say this, that probably the government's going to talk about the ET life and about, yeah, we do know about other heard other signals and stuff, and we do know that there is other life out there. Maybe they'll cue into that, but it seems really almost in the sense that when it comes to the technology part, or all of what it comes down to, that it's such still a taboo thing, and plus money thing. You got the money for everything, for oil and all that. That these greedy people seem like they're never going to want to talk about it until it's what you said earlier, Martin. That they see that the alien just comes down and reveals itself and shuts the government down, and says, "Time out. We're here to take over." You know, and I hope
this is a scenario that will happen.
Yeah.
We cannot control the world anymore. They cannot control the world anymore.
Sure.
We are up for a beautiful ride with the beautiful news that we are not alone. And we're going to share the abundance that this planet offers. Not rape the planet any longer. And we're going to see a beautiful future.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the thing of it is, you know, they got into light speed. I mean, it's from what I've seen, that could have been government. That could have been a government craft, because, like I said, I didn't see any... ET or whatever seemed very alien. For one thing, just the way it all happened. I prayed for the thing to come back. Okay, granted, let's go on the flip side. Let's say that not that far out there from a military base, plus mountains all around me. Who's to say that they weren't the government flying around? I mean, they're going, having all that. They can hear a pin drop. And they heard me, and they said, well, let's come down here and let's give this guy something here. Or... it was ET. My suspicion is it was ET because of the fact that that night on that craft, on the first one I had, that huge, I would say it looked like glass, but I want to call it diamond because it looked like diamond the way that when the moonlight was coming down on it and the reflection, it kind of huge dome. That was the biggest glass dome to ever be even constructed. I mean, that would be like world record times billion. And just in itself. So to me, that's what the whole thing goes. Okay. Mm-hmm. T- to me, that, you know, and then the technology, you know, behind getting that into that sphere, as deadly as it looked, I mean, I don't know how the heck any guy, anybody, any human being, when you go and you watch Fukushima go down in its prime, the days, remember when the days when Fukushima went down and you had all them guys showing up, walking in there at 5-minute increments, holding the sheet up to themselves, walking into this thing. So when I see that, I think, you know, now the ET might be able to work with this stuff. Look at them. They look radiated. They have no hair. They look sick. Maybe they've been able to work with it through all these years and now so it doesn't bother them. So they can work with this stuff. You know, all I know is that, you know, it definitely did seem ET to me, the craft that I'd had the encounter with. And, you know, I mean, it's that light speed is the one thing, too. I think maybe they use, you see so many of these crafts going and hear about them jumping off of the power lines or you hear them sucking off of the power. My wondering is if they're using that for another arc, because you're already going in light speed. You're already moving at light speed. Well, okay, they say, well, even if we are get the light speed, everybody, it's still 1,400 years away.
Yeah, but they go over light speed.
They can over light speed. So what they can do is maybe if they arc off another high power source, they can, boom, go that much more faster and do light speed. And so instead of they already are moving, let's say, 5 times the speed of light or 10 times or whatever, let's say arc it off of us, another higher power source, and boom, they get that much quicker. Maybe that could be a reason of another way or a reason to them, people seeing these things by high power sources, by water. Water's a fantastic conductor. Maybe they suck up water, have a little water built in their little thing, and they use that for a way for it to zap off of an arcing system and it's up to go faster and faster. And once you get light speed, it's like I say, Jiki can... 1,400 years or whatever the heck the nearest planet they're claiming to us, right, that could be an inhabitable. Of course, they're claiming. You know, I mean, it's – for all we know, it's only whatever miles, but what they're telling us, you know what I mean, guys? So it's a tricky deal. But I don't know if that makes any sense.
The Fifth Dimension is here. The Fifth Dimension was a song, a band that was played in the 60s, you know.
Yeah, the great songs, the Fifth Dimension.
Yeah. Fifth Dimension is what we're reaching now. This is the stage of development of the ascension process.
Sure.
We are in for a big ride. We are in for light and love and truth that will be shared. And you and I will have a busy job educating all those people all around the world. We come to the end of the show. I want to thank you for being on, brother. Always welcome to come back and share this beautiful experience with other listeners as well. We are in for such a big ride, brother, and your story will echo throughout the ages. Thank you for being on, and I love you.
Love you too, and I'm glad you guys had me on, and you guys have a good weekend. And everybody, I hope you enjoyed the show, and we will. I guess we'll keep in touch.
We'll keep in touch, and we'll be one very soon. No more wars, no more fighting, no more pollution, just love and light. And contact with our brothers and sisters from space, a reunited planet with the galactics of love and light. Thank you, Don, and thank you, Douglas. Be well. Thank you.